It's time to Fade the Chalk.
Fade the Chalk.
Presented by the FTN Network, helping you win your fantasy leagues and dominate in DFS. And now, here are your hosts, Derek Brown and Adam Pfeiffer.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to the Fade the Chalk podcast, brought to you by the FTN Network. You know what time it is, man! It's DFS time! This is the Game by Game episode. Adam and I are going to go game by game, giving you all of the punts, the pivots, the stacks, everything you need to know for DFS. So, as you know, my name is Debro. I am your host. I am riding with my co-host, Adam Pfeiffer. What's up, Adam?
So, I don't understand this. I'm going to go on like a tiny tangent here.
Okay.
Everybody is complaining about the Thursday night games each week. And then especially, you know, last night, the game wasn't that great, and everybody's complaining. And then they're like, oh, great, Jets and Broncos next Thursday. Do y'all understand that there was a point where people were worried if we were going to have sports at all? Sit back.
Thank you!
Sit back, enjoy watching potentially Blake Bortles and Sam Darnold, and just let it happen. Because I'm pumped that football's here. I'm not going to complain about a single thing. Except for all these players getting hurt. We talked about that. But, yeah, I don't care. I'm ready. I'm ready for football. And, screw, I enjoyed watching an undrafted rookie running back go off last night. That was sick. I love it. I don't care. I do not care. I don't care.
That's the same thing I was feeling. I see it out on Twitter, and people are like, oh, the game next week. And I'm like, dude, there was a point we weren't even going to possibly have any of this. Like, you need to cherish this. Like, you sit it down, and you stroke it. You love it. And you care for it. Because we only get 17 weeks of this, dude. 17 weeks of this until the playoffs.
If the Jets were playing the Jets on Thursday Night Football, I'd watch it. Don't care.
Oh, my gosh.
Give me all the Braxton Berrios in Showdown.
I'd watch a high school team play the Jets and probably beat them. So, yeah, man, I'm totally here for it. So before we get into all of this, Adam, we want to remind everybody, get in there to win the signed mini helmet for Kenny Golladay.
We're getting very close.
We are, dude. It is going up every single day. Last I looked, we were in the mid-60s. I know we just got a few more, so we're probably somewhere around 70 reviews. As soon as we hit 100, we are going to give this thing away. So all you have to do to win this, to possibly win this, buy yourself a ticket to the show, is to rate review us on iTunes, screenshot that review, and DM it to the Twitter handle, @ChalkFade. That's it! Literally 2 minutes! And you are entered to win this beautiful helmet. And I gotta say this, this is not the last giveaway that Adam and I are gonna do. We have got tons of great stuff all season long planned for all of our listeners and subscribers to this show. So get entered to win. So Adam, dude, let's kick this off, man. We've got another just full, beautiful slate to discuss and talk about. So first game, the Houston Texans traveled to play the Pittsburgh Steelers. The over-under is at 45. Pittsburgh is favored by 4. What do you think about this game?
Yeah, a couple pieces of injury news. Juju didn't practice Wednesday or Thursday, and people were starting to get worried. He's going to play. I think I saw on his Instagram he even said he's fine. He's going to play. And, like, if you see, you're going to see a lot of players not practicing on Wednesday. The Steelers have already done it the first 2 weeks of the year with Juju and Deontay Johnson. Wednesday, do not panic about Wednesday practice reports. That is usually a veteran rest day for a lot of these players, so do not overreact to that. But Juju, I think, is going to be fine. I look at this game and I see another really tough spot for Deshaun Watson. The Steelers are ridiculous with their pressure. I mean, they're at a league high 42.6% pressure rate right now. That is not good for Deshaun Watson, who is 18th in the completion rate when under pressure so far this season. So for me, I know there was the mystery of Will Fuller last week. He was in and out of the game with the injury, but he's not even on the injury report, I believe. So I still think it's going to be a tough spot for him to get downfield. So I'm looking at this game, and it's so weird that this is the first thing that stands out to me on the Texans side. But there's three tight ends we're going to talk about at least on this podcast today that are under 4K on DraftKings that I'm considering. And one of them is Jordan Akins. Like, Jordan Akins has, like, there was a split between him and Darren Fells last year, and Fells was scoring all the touchdowns. But Jordan Akins is the tight end one on this team right now. He's playing around 82% of the snaps. He had a career high 7 catches last week, and he's, you know, second behind Mike Gesicki in tight end routes from the slot. So he's essentially playing like a big slot receiver for them. And I think in this game, you're going to see T.J. Watt and those guys get after this Texans offensive line. I mean, Deshaun Watson's been sacked 8 times the first 2 weeks, and that's going to lead to short passing from Watson, and I think that's going to benefit a guy like Jordan Akins. So at $3,400, if I'm going cheap at tight end, he is one of the three guys I'm looking at. But man, other than that, like, I know you love DJ, and he's not expensive, but I just don't want to play anybody against Pittsburgh right now, man. It's just, they're that good.
They are that good, and I love that you brought up the pressure rate. So if you head over to FTN Fantasy, FTNDaily.com, we have got two beautiful new tools that I helped our developers, our tech team. So big shout-out to Josh, Elliot, everybody for all of our...
They're so absurd. Dude,
These two tools are amazing, and they're free! Like, if you're not utilizing this, I don't know what to tell you. But like you're talking about, and this has to be hammered on, is that Pittsburgh's pressure is ridiculous. The other thing that's ridiculous is how much the Texans are allowing Deshaun Watson to get beat the hell up. Like, this team is allowing the second most pressure behind only Seattle in the NFL right now. So like you're talking about, Watson's going to be under duress. I have no, really, like, outside of, like, your call on Akins, who else are you going to, like, if you want to even possibly stack this game, who are you going to run it back with? Like, David Johnson, we talked about him last week, but, I mean, still, the Texans didn't run the ball a ton. You know, I will own up and take the L on that call, although I will state as well, though, like, you know, Deshaun Watson airmail Johnson on a totally wide open screen pass that would have been for another touchdown. But I don't have any interest in David Johnson. The other pass catchers here, I mean, Hayden is going to go against Fuller. And if anybody's looking at Steven Nelson's counting stats, I think those are falsely misrepresented because Slayton ate him up in week one. But if you look at week two, he was targeted 5 times, only allowed 2 receptions, 34 yards, and a 63 passer rating allowed. So it's not like he's falling off the cliff either, which he would be matching up against Brandon Cooks. I like your call on Akins because Watson's got to throw the ball somewhere, dude. And if he's going to be under pressure, I really like that. Now, over to the Pittsburgh side, Deontay Johnson, whether or not Juju plays, I think the wide receiver that you really want to prioritize out of this game would be Deontay Johnson because he's going to face Bradley Roby, who is rallying through 2 weeks. He's allowing a 88% catch rate, 53 yards, 128 passer rating. I think that he is the guy that if you're going to pick a receiver out of this game to go with, it would be Deontay for me. But the best play out of this game, and honestly, Adam, I think that he gets overlooked because we're going to get to it. There are a lot of really good running backs in the 6K range, and I think James Conner is going to go really overlooked this week, and I love him. Because the fact of it is that the Houston Texans, so like I said, you go over to FDNDaily.com, you look at the offensive line, look at defensive line. The Pittsburgh Steelers, the offensive line, is getting healthier. Pouncey got in a full practice. They're getting DeCastro back, who I think he hasn't even played this year so far.
They're getting him back, and it's massive.
It's huge, dude. Like, I think that he helps Big Ben more in the passing and pass protection than he does in the run game. But you can't understate his factors in the run game as well because it's still a starter versus a backup. And I love Connor in this spot. So like I'm talking about, adjusted line yards and understanding offensive-defensive line matchups, which I write our offensive-defensive line matchup column every single week over at FTNDaily.com. And understanding those is one of the best things. That, along with wide receiver cornerback matchups, if you diagnose them right, it is one of the best possible edges that you can get in DFS. Because that's where you get these random blow-up weeks out of running backs, wide receivers. That's what you really want to target. And if you look at James Conner, man, Houston is 30th in adjusted line yards. They're 29th in second level yards allowed. 31st in open field yards. Like, it is ridiculous. They're giving up a ton of production. And for everybody that's worried about Benny Snell, what are you looking at? Like, he didn't get a ton of run last week. He barely got used. They want a bell cow. Connor played 77% of the snaps last week. And he ran routes. Houston was 26th versus pass-catching running backs last year. They allowed the third most receptions and tied for the most receiving touchdowns. So if you're looking for an avenue, whether or not Juju plays, James Conner is going to go overlooked on this slate. Like, I'm not going to be surprised. I haven't even looked at rostering percentages yet. But I'm not going to be surprised if he's sub 5%. And it is an egregious error. Like, people need to be playing James Conner. And I get the injury concerns. But that's another reason why you're going to get him and nobody else wants to play him in what looks like a smash spot on paper. But, Adam, thoughts on James Conner here?
You can't even, like... Like, injury concerns for James Conner, like, I get it, but it's like, if you're worried about him getting hurt, you're never going to play him in DFS, because it's not going to be like, oh, okay, week three, I'm worried about him getting hurt, but not week four. Like, there's always going to be that potential, and honestly, it's a running back position. I mean, anybody could get hurt. I know James Conner has had injuries in the past, but I'm with you. James Conner, I had him in my prize picks article, which is up at ftndaily.com. I took the over on his prop. I think it's a good spot. He handled 18 of the 23 running back touches last week. And the Texans right now, just over 51% of the yardage surrendered by the Houston Texans defense has come via the run. It's the highest rate in the NFL through 2 weeks. And you mentioned what they've allowed to pass catching running backs. So, yeah, I'm definitely in on James Conner. And then Deontay Johnson, 31% target share. He's still too cheap. He is still too cheap on DraftKings. I believe he's $5,400. Just too cheap. He's 54. So, there's a $1,200 difference between him and Juju. That's just wrong. I mean, nothing against Juju, but Deontay Johnson's been the 1A right now. And a $1,200 difference, I'm just going to play Deontay over Juju every time.
Well, so if Juju was somehow ruled out here, and this really only comes down to, like, if Juju's ruled out, because if he plays, I think he's in play. But Houston is 30th in short pass DVOA right now. So they cannot, and they were 29th last year. They can't defend, they're really good against deep passing, but they can't defend short passing for anything, man. Like, they cannot stop it. So I do want to mention Eric Ebron here. I do think that he's a little bit thin considering how much value we have on this slate, but I got to get him in here because if Juju is out, I think that he's in play, and he's especially in play if you're looking to stack this game. Although, like I said, I'm not really going to go that way. But Eric Ebron, snaps jumped from 63 to 77%. His routes per dropback increased from 66 to 73%. So I think that he firmly is in play, and especially if Juju's out, nobody's going to roster him. I really like him in this game. Your thoughts on Ebron?
There's definitely upside. I mean, if you're going relatively cheap at tight end, you really want a guy that can potentially just score twice. And Ebron has as good a chance to score twice as, I want to say, any tight end in the NFL, because just that's where he's utilized most. So I prefer Akins and some other tight ends at the cheaper range, but I have no problem with Ebron. And, yeah, that's like, I probably won't play Juju on the slate because I like receivers around his price tag a lot more. But if you do play him, like, I don't think it's a bad play by any means.
Yeah, agreed. All right, moving on. So Tennessee travels to Minnesota. The over-under sits at, surprisingly, 49.5. Tennessee is favored by 2. I'm a little bit surprised by how high that over-under is, Adam. I don't know about you, but, I mean, maybe just like Vegas thinks that, you know, we've talked about how bad the Vikings team or the defense has been. That's really what I got to point to here, but... thoughts on this game, dude?
Yeah, so it doesn't look like A.J. Brown's going to return to the lineup, which isn't too surprising given the initial report on him last week. So you're looking at a receiving corps of Corey Davis, Adam Humphries, and then, you know, Khalif Raymond will end up being the third guy. But I think the running backs are kind of interesting because there are two running backs that have been a little bit underwhelming this year. I know Dalvin Cook's had the touchdowns, but Dalvin Cook right now is just 12th among all running backs with a 65.2% opportunity share. Like, you would not expect him to be outside the top five, let alone 12th. But, you know, Alexander Mattison's still getting decent amount of touches. So I think Cook in tournaments is kind of interesting. I mean, James Robinson had a productive game against Tennessee in week two. So in tournaments, I kind of like Dalvin Cook. The same kind of with Derrick Henry. Like, he's still getting 30 touches a game. I think the touchdowns are going to come. And Minnesota has, they've not been good at, you know, stuffing the run so far this year. But assuming A.J. Brown's out, I don't mind going back to Adam Humphries at 3,900 here. I mean, we know how bad these Vikings corners are. They're banged up right now as well. Now, Adam Humphries is going to play in a slot where their best corner is Mike Hughes, but Mike Hughes isn't a guy that I see and I go, okay, I'm not playing somebody against Mike Hughes. Humphries is sub 4K, caught 5 to 6 targets for 48 yards and a touchdown last week. And the Vikings have allowed 2 slot touchdowns per game this year, which is the most in the NFL. So I think there's a potential for Adam Humphries to do well here. The same for Corey Davis. But again, I think their targets are going to be similar, if not, you know, more for Humphries. And it's a, you know, $1,300 difference. So I think Adam Humphries, in a, just off pure price, is my favorite play from this game, which is weird. Then I like Adam Thielen, though. I mean, he's under 7K. He's top 5 in both air yard percentage at 50. He has 52% of the Vikings' air yards. And his 33.3% target share is also top 5 in the league. So you know where the ball is going when Kirk Cousins drops back to pass. The question is he going to complete passes to his own team this week? That'd be ideal, right? That would be ideal.
Cousins just, I mean, I hope he was wearing a Depend, because he absolutely crapped his pants last week. Like, that is legit, like, has to be, honestly, like, after, and I went back and looked at his game log, because I wrote him up as streamer, so then I had to tuck my tail between my legs, and then write up this week's article for quarterback streamers, and talk about how bad that Kirk Cousins played, and I'm just like, oh, thank you, Kirk, love you, appreciate you. But it was legit, like, the worst game of his career. Like, the second game since 2015, he's had three interceptions, and the lowest passing yardage total he's ever thrown for since becoming a starter. So I think it's a good get-right spot, like, versus Tennessee, because, like, look, like, dude, we're looking at practice reports right now. Like, Malcolm Butler, DMP, limited practice, quad injury. Chris Jackson, DMP, limited with a hammy. Jonathan Joseph has an illness and a calf injury, full practice, and then DMP. If you look on the other side of the Vikings, like, DMP for Cameron Dantzler. So Jeff Gladney will get the start again. Mike Hughes, like, you're talking about in the slot. He hasn't even practiced at the time of recording this right now. He has not practiced this week. So both of these teams could be rolling out a bunch of backups and who knows what and in the secondary. So I think that's a good call with Adam Humphries, and I think people would more likely go to Corey Davis. I think he's a little bit pricey. He's at 5,200. Would you say Adam Humphries was 3,900?
39, yeah.
So my only problem with Humphries is that they are going to have to dink and dunk to get him there. And the problem that I have with Humphries is that Tennessee runs so much. They do not run hardly any. Like, they're one of the lowest teams in the league over the last 2 years at running 11 personnel. So, like, his snaps and his targets, unless he just gets a crap ton of targets per snap, they're capped. I mean, like, I don't see, like, it's going to be really hard for Humphries to get there as far as, like, him getting a 9 or 10 target game. Like, I don't see that in his range of outcomes.
No, could he get 7 or 8?
Well, not with what they do with personnel, and that's the only problem that I have with Humphries is that, you know, his ceiling, his snaps, and his routes are capped based off of what they do personnel-wise. And Corey Davis is too freaking expensive. Like, $5,200 for Corey Davis, who, you know, like, I was off of Jonnu because of volume concerns. I'm off of Corey Davis because of volume concerns. Because, well, I mean, what's the median for them? Like, 4 targets, 5 targets each? Like, I know Jonnu got there last week, but the dude still got, like, I was right. He got 5 targets. He just happened to catch all of them for 84 yards and 2 touchdowns. But that's exactly where you put him at as far as a volume perspective. We're looking at volume. We're looking at snaps. You know, those things correlate obviously well to fantasy points because you want opportunities. I have a really hard time as far as playing anybody outside of possibly Derrick Henry on the Tennessee side. And Derrick Henry, he's still mispriced for what his role is at 7,800 over on DK. I have a lot of worries about Derrick Henry. Like, Adam, have you watched these games? Like, Derrick Henry looks like he probably needs another pep talk from Eddie George right now. Like, you're not seeing him just explode through the hole. Tennessee's offensive line is not just mauling guys right now. Like, they're 19th at adjusted line yards, 23rd, 24th, and 2nd in open field yards, which is good. But it's not, like, amazing. Like, it's more middle of the pack. And Minnesota is a good matchup for him. I will not deny that. Like, because they're 27th in adjusted line yards. But I think this could be a fact of where that, like, Minnesota's just like, yeah, our corners aren't great. We know you're not willing to throw the ball a ton. So let's just take Derrick Henry out of this game and try to make you beat us through the air, which I'm not saying that Tennessee can't do, but I mean, we've seen like the targets can go one of a billion different ways. Like Corey Davis is going to get targets. Adam Humphrey is going to get targets. Whether Derrick Henry gets any targets out of the backfield, he could house one of them, you know, or somebody like a freaking Pruitt or one of these other backup tight ends because of how much they were on 12 catches a tutty, you know, like Tannehill could get there and not bring anybody else with him. You know, so I got more concerns. I just feel like on this slate with the value that we have at some of these positions, especially at running back, that I don't know if I'm going to go down that far to any of the receivers in this game. I like the Adam Thielen call. Like I talked about, Jonathan Joseph is probably who would see him the most. So if he's out, you're looking at some kind of backup, probably Christian Fulton, the rookie going against Adam Thielen, which, yeah, I mean, give me Thielen in that spot. I do think the only other thing that puts me off of Thielen a little bit is he's just so freaking expensive. Like, he's like, what, 6,800? He's inside the top five for wide receiver pricing. So I like him. I don't love him. I can't say that I'll probably end up, even though, we're talking about the over-under is sky high, and I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around, like, why it is that high, Adam. I mean, any thoughts? Because outside of, like, if you were just to stare at that and say, okay, I want games that are going to have somewhere around a 50-point combined total, and that's what I want to target, these high-scoring possible games. I just don't know if that's what's going to happen here, but what do you think?
Yeah, it's definitely a little surprising. Maybe it's because the public just sees this Vikings defense, finally sees them as not good, but still, to the point where it's like two slower offenses to have a near 50-point total, a little surprising, but I think Thielen's awesome in tournaments because, like you said, he is priced among those top five receivers where for me, though, this slate for receivers is kind of weird, right? You have Hopkins at the high end. We're going to talk about Julio and Calvin Ridley next. But then it's like, okay, you have Stephon Diggs. Love him. But he's going to see Jalen Ramsey. And it's like, wide receiver's not that great on this slate compared to what it could be. And obviously, that has mostly to do with all the freaking injuries we have and the fact that even though they're both hurt, they're not. Even if they were healthy, they wouldn't be on the main slate with Michael Thomas and Davante Adams. So it's a little bit weirder of a wide receiver slate than normal.
So I did kind of gloss over. I need to backtrack here for a second. I like your call on Dalvin Cook. I think that he's a really, really sharp tournament play this week. If you look at Tennessee, what they're giving up on the ground, they're 22nd in adjusted line yards allowed. They're also 22nd in second level and 29th, which we've seen Cook. We just haven't seen a big blow-up game of Cook yet. Like, him to get 20-plus touches and just ransack people. So, like we're talking about, and we haven't even gotten to any of those games yet, I think that the 6K running back range is probably where most people live this week. And I don't disagree with that. Like, when we get there, there are two running backs. Like, if you're not starting your builds with these two running backs this week, I legit don't know what the hell you're doing, and you need to reconsider life a little bit. But I do like Dalvin Cook in tournaments this week. I think that he's a really, really sharp GPP call, especially in large field. I think that his ownership is really going to come in low this week. Like, where would you peg him at?
12.
Yeah, I think he's going to be sub 10. I think he's going to be sub 10. I think I'd probably put him somewhere in like last week's Aaron Jones range, like somewhere around like 7%, I think, is probably in most tournaments this week.
Yeah, I'll probably take the under on 12, actually, now that I think about it, because you have those two 6K running backs we're going to talk about in a little bit.
Yeah. All right, let's move over to the next game here. The Bears travel to Atlanta. Atlanta's favored by 3. The over-under is set at 47.5. Julio is probably not going to suit up in this game. They've come out and said that he's a true game-time decision. He has not practiced as of yet, dealing with a hamstring injury. It sounds like he's been gutting it out all the way since training camp.
I think he plays and is a decoy.
Okay.
Which is the same thing, essentially.
Yeah, and we've seen that happen. And even if he plays, I don't know if that really moves the needle that much on Calvin Ridley and how much people are going to roster him this week. But Thoughts on this game, Adam? Because I think it's interesting. I really do.
I'll tell you what, man. I really like what I've seen from David Montgomery this year. Like, a lot.
Yep.
So, this year so far, he's 7th in the league in yards after contact per carry at 3.8. Last year, he was at 1.6. That was, like, one of the worst marks in the NFL, which was surprising because coming out of college, he was known for breaking tackles. So, I think he's just looks a lot better this year. And if you look at the volume he has, right, it's not anything that's going to wow you, right? In the first game, 14 touches. Last game, 19. But consider in week one against Detroit, they were chasing points the entire second half. He still had 14 touches. Last week, he had 19 touches and left the game for a little bit with that, I think it was a neck injury. He came back, though. So, like, there's a path that this game stays close for 22 to 25 touches. He's looked good. Atlanta is still, you know, a solid defense in regards to just stopping the run up the middle, but they're giving up touchdowns to running backs, and they're allowing receptions to running backs again. And Montgomery has not been a zero in that regard. He has 4 catches for 2 weeks. He had the receiving touchdown. I kind of like him at 5,700. I don't know if he's, like, has a huge ceiling, but if I get to him, I have no problem with it. I think he's looked really good this year. And then Allen Robinson, I think, is due for a strong game here. And at 6,200, like, the targets are still there. He has 9 in both games. He's running a ton of routes. He hasn't scored yet. That's coming. And, you know, I'm not as scared of this Falcons secondary. So those are the two Bears that stand out to me. I think Robinson is one of my favorite 6K receivers. I just think he is due for, you know, 100 and a touchdown.
Yeah, I like the call of Montgomery. The problem with Montgomery is his price for me. Like, he's at 5,700. Why not just pay up into the 6K range right for the running backs? That's my whole problem with him.
Which is why, like, he will go very overlooked. But yeah. Does he have the upside to match, you know, some of those guys? I don't know. But I have really liked what I've seen. And, you know, Atlanta is a defense that will give up high upside games to players against him. I mean, we see it. We saw it all last year. We're seeing it so far this year with, you know, more so, you know, I mean, Chris Carson had 2 receiving touchdowns against him. And apparently he's just going to score a receiving touchdown every week now. But, you know, if Chris Carson can do it, I mean, Montgomery can do it.
16 receiving touchdowns for Carson in the year, none rushing. I mean, imagine. You know, that's probably, you know, hashtag math, the pace that he's on right now.
If that happens, I mean, Russ is obviously winning the MVP.
I mean, he's cooking his way there right now. But the thing on Montgomery is that the Bears are blocking extremely well for him right now. Like, they're 3rd in adjusted line yards for their offensive line. I like him. The problem is, like, if he was 5,100 or closer to, like, 5K flat, then I would have more interest in him. The problem is, like, with him, like, being so sandwiched so close to the 6K backs, I probably don't get there this week. I love Calvin Ridley in this spot. I mean, how could you not? If Julio is just a decoy, heck, if he's out. I mean, legit, like, he's going to face Kyle Fuller, who has been good this year, but last year gave up a lot of production, especially to deep routes. And if you look at, you know, I don't really have any kind of interest in Russell Gage. He's going to face Buster Screen in the slot, who is okay, but not terrible, not great. Like, it's not just a screaming must-play matchup. Like you're talking about, dude, I really love some Allen Robinson in this game. Isaiah Oliver has not been good. Like, 15 targets in his coverage, he's allowed catches on 10 of them, 141 yards, and a 119 passer rating allowed. I actually, as scary as it sounds, Adam, if I was going to go with one of the quarterbacks in this game, it's probably Trubisky for me.
It's
frightening. Like, those are the types of things that, like, give you the cold sweat whenever you press submit over on DraftKings. But, I mean, we've seen Trubisky had over 20 points in the first game. The second game, the Giants just did not make them have to throw the ball. And the Bears are not a team that they're like, they don't go into a game where Matt Nagy is like, all right, baby, let's fire it up. 45 passing attempts for Mitch Trubisky this week. Woo! All the way to a W! Like, that doesn't happen, man. Like, he's not saying that in the game plan meetings with the offensive coordinators. Like, this is how I win. I feed Trubisky passing attempts. But if the Falcons are able to push them and put points on the board, then you're going to see, like, Chicago's going to have to throw the ball, man. These corners for Atlanta are not good. Anthony Miller's another guy that we got to mention here. Darkus Dennard, we've talked about on previous episodes, 20 times targeted, 16 catches allowed. Passer rating allowed is at 100. I really like the Bears side of here. So if you're going to possibly stack this game, it's Trubisky, Robinson, and Miller for me. And I'd probably run it back with Ridley because he's just going to get so much dang volume.
I don't think it matters for Calvin Ridley if Julio plays or not.
Oh, no.
I think people are going to see Julio get ruled out if it happens and go, oh, got to have 100% Calvin Ridley. Like, do you understand he has 24 targets or 22 targets for 2 weeks anyway? I know Julio wasn't like a 90% snap guy last week, but he's still out there for the majority of the game, whether he was limited or not. And it's like, it's not like Julio's absence means Calvin Ridley's getting more red zone looks because we know Julio doesn't get looks down there. I think Julio being out impacts like Hayden Hurst more so than it would Calvin Ridley, because Calvin Ridley's already been dominant this year anyway. So not that he's a bad play, but I think if you're just skyrocketing your projection for Calvin Ridley, if Julio gets ruled out, I think it's just wrong. Like, I don't think it really matters that much, which is weird.
So my whole thing about it, and another reason I like the Bears side of it more, is because the Bears have actually been really good versus tight ends over the last 2 years. I mean, they're not allowing a ton of production. Like, right now they're 12 versus tight ends. Last year they were middle of the road, 16. So there's a path for Hurst. I don't love him a ton in this game. I think there's just better options at tight end. But the biggest thing on this game that I want to stress here is that you want to target teams in DFS that give it up deep. That, like, when the quarterbacks decide to, like, sit back there and chuck it all the way down the field. And both of these defenses are doing that, man. Like, Atlanta's 27th in DVOA versus deep targets. You have Chicago on the other side over the last 2 years, 22nd and 24th versus deep passing. And Ridley, not Julio, has been the guy when Ryan sits back there and he winds it up to go deep. Ridley's been that dude. Like, he has 50% of Ryan's deep targets this year, and Ryan is third in the NFL in deep targets. So while I don't have a lot of interest on the Atlanta side, as far as, like, I would not be looking at that offense to stack that, as far as if I was going to target this game as one to do so, it's really the Bears and then running it back with Ridley. And I don't really like a whole lot of other plays out of this game. Like, don't come at me with your Todd Gurley. People I saw were talking about him last week. Dear God in heaven. Like, why? How many weeks is it gonna take?
Dude, stop playing Todd Gurley. I don't care if he scores 3 1-yard touchdowns in this game. He's a bad play.
The people that want to still stand for Todd Gurley are the same people that were standing for Le'Veon Bell prior to the season. We told you no, just no, for both of them. You didn't listen. I hope people are listening now, man. All right, so moving over to the next game. The Raiders are headed to play the Patriots. Looking at this, the over-under is set at 47.5. I think this game definitely hits the under. New England is favored by 5.5. I think that is going to go up, because just looking at practice reports and things of that nature, ooh, my gosh, the Raiders are just banged up, dude. Like, Trent Brown's probably out again. Denzel Good, the guy that filled in for right tackle, hasn't practiced this week. You look at Richie Incognito, DMP, I mean, Josh Jacobs is banked up with a hip injury. Darren Waller has a knee thing where he hasn't practiced this week so far.
I saw a report like 20 minutes ago on those two that the Raiders expect Waller and Josh Jacobs to both play. So, what it's worth.
You hope and pray, probably, the Raiders, they got a freaking chance if they don't.
I think, and I'll keep an eye on the practice reports from today, but I think the fact that they played Monday night was the reason they both sat Thursday's practice, is like kind of an extra day of rest. So I would expect them to be back out there Friday, and if they are, they're probably playing. Yeah, so I really don't like this game that much outside of Cam, because Cam's the GOAT, and he not only is running at a high rate, but he looks good throwing the ball too, despite, you know, he's making N'Keal Harry and Demir Byrd look good. And at 6,700, like, he's still priced fairly. You can use him by himself, and he's among the league leaders in carries inside the five. Like, I think Cam is just going to be a super high floor player all year. But yeah, the rest of this game, I'm kind of stuck on, because New England's defense is still solid for sure. I know Russell Wilson just carved them up, but it looks like Russell Wilson's going to be doing that to everybody this year. And I don't know, man. Like, it's Edelman's at a price where I'd rather play other guys. I know he had the most receiving yards of his career last game, but Seattle's been that bad against receivers. I don't know if the Raiders are going to be as bad as that. So I don't know. I don't know if I'm just completely missing out on something, but I'm not crazy about this game.
I'm with you. I'm absolutely with you. Like, literally on my notes, it just says Cam naked. That's all I want. Like, I don't want any parts or pieces outside of running Cam naked in tournaments, and I rarely ever do that because I want the correlation. Instead of just picking and choosing pieces and parts, I want the correlation with a quarterback, pass catchers, and games that can shoot out. But, dude, in Cam Newton, it's all you're doing right now is getting Lamar Jackson at, like, he's 6,700. You're getting Lamar Jackson at 6,700. And people are going to be like, okay, come on. Like, legit? Like, is that really where you're going? Come on, man. Like, he's fourth in red zone rushing attempts. He's third inside the five in, as far as rushing attempts. This team can eviscerate the Raiders. And Cam can spread the ball out to a ton of different dudes. Like, we have told you and we talked about, the reason that Cam is doing so well this year is because he fell into an offense that is perfect for him. As much play action as the Patriots have run in previous seasons, as much as they're running this year, Cam right now is fifth in play action completion percentage, and he gets to play against a Raiders team that was 32nd last year in yards per play allowed on play action passing. You have Cam, who is second in play-action passing attempts, behind only your man, Josh Allen. So I love Cam. I love running him naked this week. I don't want any other parts or pieces out of this game because in Cam, you're not only getting all the passing game weapons and you get exposure to them through Cam. Cam probably gets there and doesn't bring anybody along with him, and he is their goal line back. He is their best running back. So I don't want any Raiders, man. Like, I don't see a part of, like, this game where the Raiders get there or a Raider does get there. Like, Bill Belichick is going to scheme up ways to stop Darren Waller. If he has to basically say, all right, you four dudes, get on this one guy and force everybody else to beat us. Like, they're not going to let Darren Waller be a thing. Carr is not going to be able to religiously just sit back there and target him 15 times a game like he did versus the Saints, who had no answer for him. They couldn't do anything to stop him, and that is not what's going to happen. Not versus this secondary. This secondary is still elite. Even if you have questions along their defensive line and their rush defense, which that's fine if you want to play Josh Jacobs, he's going to get a crap ton of volume. But just like versus the Saints, that doesn't mean that he's going to get there, okay? And in tournaments, there's no way in hell that I'm playing Jacobs. So it's Cam naked for me, and I don't want any other part of this game. But moving over to the next game, you have San Francisco heads to New York. They play the Giants. They're favored by 4. The over-under sits at 42. The pace of this game, before I sat down and looked at all of this game, I actually had some interest in this game. And in this game as a whole, I really don't, Adam. Like, The more I've looked at this game, I don't really have any parts that I want out of it.
Let's get the elephant out of the room. Let's address the elephant out of the room. I don't know how you get him out of the room. You need, like, a lot of
you
bodies.
You can't get him out of the room. He's here to stay, baby.
So Jimmy Garoppolo has been ruled out. Nick Mullins is 5,100. Yes or no?
Hell no. No. I can't. Because the fact of it is that San Francisco can win this game and Mullins cannot do a whole lot to make that happen.
Okay.
Your thoughts?
No, I tend to agree. I'm more of like, I'm more in the not really than the hell no. but I hear you. Then the other thing with the dress is the backfields, because they're both really messy right now. The Giants losing Saquon Barkley, they're going to have some sort of committee between Wayne Gallman and Deion Lewis, and if Devonta Freeman is active, and if he's caught up on the playbook, he'll probably play, but sparingly. And then the 49ers are going to have, you know, Jerick McKinnon and Jeff Wilson Jr. The Niners is at least a little bit more easy to project, because anytime Jeff Wilson's been on the field and getting a significant run for San Francisco, he's been the goal line back. So there's going to be a path to him getting high-value touches. He's 4K, but like, he could see 8 touches in this game, and if he doesn't score, you're screwed. And then Jerick McKinnon, he's looked really good. He's 4,900. Like, what are you doing with these backfields? Because there's value to be had, but is it necessarily going to be good value?
Giants is a firm hell no. Like, all right, even if I knew that without a question of a doubt that Deion Lewis was going to get all of the work, and somebody told me like he was a 4K, hell no. Like the Giants can't block to save their freaking lives right now, and that's the problem for Daniel Jones that I have in this game, and that's also the problem with a lot of like basically every other part on the Giants side is that the Giants right now, they are allowing the 11th most pressure right now and going against the San Francisco team that is 10th in pressure rate. You have also the Giants are 32nd. There is not a team that is worse than them in adjusted line yards. So those running backs aren't going anywhere. They might as well just say, hey, I remember this. This is exactly what happened to us when we played the Steelers. We're going to get negative yards when we get the ball. That's what's going to happen. And so I don't want any Giants backs. As far as San Francisco, man, people are going to play Jerick McKinnon. And if he gets there and he plays off for the Chalk Donkeys, like, I don't know what to say because I understand his price. But really, what's the ceiling for touches for him?
I was just going to ask you, what if I put the over-under. 12? I was going to say, if I put the over-under at 12.5, are you taking the over or the under?
It's a good line.
That's what I'm saying.
It's a good line.
That's exactly what I'm saying. And like at that point, like if you're gonna play one of these backs from San Francisco, I'll take Jeff Wilson's high value touches if he gets 8 of them. Then Jerick McKinnon, like McKinnon's gonna catch more passes, you would think. But like I'm not here to say Jeff Wilson Jr. when he's on the field isn't gonna catch passes because his team's potentially without George Kittle, who's a game time decision. And remember, he's in the same field and the same turf that you know they were complaining about last week. So like, why rush him back given all the injuries this team has right now? I'd be surprised if George Kittle plays. So like, without Kittle and without Deebo Samuel, who's to say that they like Jeff Wilson doesn't get a couple targets in this game? Like, this is such a gross game, but there's potentially value, but it's also like bad value potentially. It's so weird. You know what I'm gonna do in this game, D-Bro? I'm just gonna play Golden Tate.
Yep, I'm with you, man. That's exactly where I was about to go. Like, I don't want any of the backs on San Francisco like you're talking about. It's gonna be a three-way split and none of them can hit their ceilings. If Jerick McKinnon does it, he does it off of like he's gonna have to do it off
Dude,
of like
all he needs is another third and 31 opportunity.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, like, the whole thing about that as well is the Giants are not bad on the defensive side as far as against the run. They're 13th in adjusted line yards allowed. Like, so it's not like they're just giving it up and you can just say, okay, Jerick McKinnon's going to house, like, 2 for 50 yards, like, in this game. Like, that's not what's going to happen. So I'm with you. I think it's Golden Tate or nobody. And Kawan Williams for the 49ers is really good in the slot. So even that is a hedge. Like, if I have Golden Tate, I think that he's more at least at this point when we're recording right now, I like him for the volume. The problem is that I just don't know if he has a ceiling in this game. I like his price point. He's at 4,500 over on DK, but the matchup is not screaming amazing. We know that Daniel Jones is going to be under pressure. So even with him, It's really tough to get there. But if I'm going to play anybody out of this game, I do agree with you. I think it's Golden Tate or it's nobody just based off a volume play because with Sterling Shepard, who we haven't even mentioned here, he's out. And I know we talked about it earlier in the week for the trade four, but Golden Tate, when Shepard was out last year, I mean, the dude was basically a wide receiver too every single week. He saw nearly 9 targets a game. So for the volume narrative, I get it, but as far as this game as a whole, I'm probably just going in other directions. All right, moving over to the Bengals versus the Eagles. The over-under sits at 46. Eagles are favored by 5. What are your thoughts, Adam?
Yeah, so we got a couple pieces of injury news about 15, 20 minutes ago. Geno Atkins, who has not played yet this year and is one of the reasons why this Bengals run defense has been abysmal, he's been ruled out again. Mike Daniels, who also hasn't played, will be back and will make his debut, but it's not going to be enough to get me or anybody else off Miles Sanders, who is probably going to be one of the most popular plays of the entire slate, and it's hard to argue it. I mean, his first game back, there was no Doug Peterson backfield committee nonsense. Sanders played 77% of the snaps, handled 23 of the 30 running back touches, got all the goal line work, and scored. The Bengals are allowing 2 rushing touchdowns per game in the early going. They just allowed 4 touchdowns So the combination of Chubb and Kareem Hunt last week, and 200 rushing yards between the two. It's just bad. You know, you talked about offensive line, defensive line mismatches. This has got to be, even with the Eagles' injuries, like Lane Johnson's back, and that helped a lot last week. This is just still a mismatch, and Miles Sanders is, you know, it's going to be really hard to get away from him, and I'll let you talk about him here in a second, but I am loving the Wentz of Sean Jackson or the Wentz Zach Ertz stacks in tournaments.
Miles Sanders, if you don't play him, and I'm talking about lock buttoning him, like lock him. Like, this is the first person you put in your lineups, and you do not build one, and people are like, oh, but he's going to be this much rostered. Okay, then you just play more. The answer is more. Like, Miles Sanders is going to smash this team in the freaking mouth. Last week, you're talking about Lane Johnson being back. He was third in amongst all running backs in 3.2 yards before contact. Dude is almost getting halfway to a first down before anybody even touches him. So you're going against the Bengals who can't stop. They can't stop a light breeze on the ground. They're 28th in adjusted line yards allowed. I love Sanders. I will not make up a lineup without him. I don't know what DK was thinking. Like, his price tag over on DraftKings, they had to be drunk beyond compare. Like, beer goggles deep to possibly consider this price for Miles Sanders this week. So, love Miles Sanders. I do have some interest in Zach Ertz in tournaments because, oh my gosh, the 5,100 price tag that he's got is just too damn cheap, Adam. Like, if there's one guy that could break the slate at the tight end position and you're staring at your lineups at the end of the weekend and you say, why in the hell did I not play this guy? It's Zach Ertz at 5,100. And people are going to say, well, yeah, but Dallas Goedert is right below him. I understand that, but if you look at every other metric outside of, like, the things that really matter as far as routes run, as far as the time that either one of these tight ends has been in the slot, Ertz bests Goddard in both of those. Like, Ertz has run 77 routes compared to Goddard 68. Goddard is being asked to block more. Ertz has been in the slot 54% compared to Goddard's 44%. So how this team attacks the Bengals, it's going to be on the ground, and it's going to be short area targets. Like, everybody's going to point to the air yards, and I understand it, but Cincinnati, the way that you beat them right now is short passing. They're 25th versus short passes right now, and that's really, honestly, really Miles Sanders, because they're 30th against running backs in the passing game. But I do, because they are getting beat short, I do have interest in Zach Ertz, because we know, we have seen this dude have slate-breaking upside. The corners for the Bengals are actually playing pretty decently through the early going. I know it's a small sample. I'm not telling you that they're great. But, so as far as, like, the wide receivers for Philly, the top two wide receivers for this team are the tight ends. And probably, heck, the second guy that's probably their best wide receivers, it may be actually Miles Sanders. Moving over to the Bengals side, I think that Drew Sample is in play. I don't know if I go there and get that cute this week with some of the value that we have, because as much as I like Sample, and I've talked about him previously in the offseason as far as a deep dynasty stash guy, but as far as DFS goes, he just doesn't add a whole lot to, like, what he's going to do after the catch. On pure volume, can he get there? Yes. I mean, I understand that. He had a 35% target share upon, like, coming in for CJ Uzomah last week, who's out for the year. And if you look at Philly, they're 31st in short area targets. So how this team is going to attack, I'm talking about Sample here first. The way that I really, really think Cincinnati does that is with Tyler Boyd. So if there was one guy out of this game that I was going to pick, and if you do have interest in Wentz and you want to stack up the Philly side, which I'm not stacking the Bengals. Like, I just, their run defense is really good. I have no interest in Joe Mixon. I don't have any interest in A.J. Green because I have so many concerns. And I know that Darius Slay is still hashtag good, and I don't know that about A.J. Green. Like, I get his 6,000 price tag, but why? I would much rather play Tyler Boyd at 5,900 going against Nickell Robey Coleman, who I thought Roby Coleman was going to be an upgrade for Philly in the slot this year coming over from the Rams, but in the early going, he has not looked great. I mean, he's allowed all 9 of his targets to be caught for 102 yards, a touchdown, and a 150 passer rating. So if there was one guy on the Cincinnati side that I would prioritize in tournaments, much less if I was going to stack this game and I'm looking for a run back, it's going to be Tyler Boyd for me. But thoughts, Adam, what do you think about this game, man?
Yeah, so Miles Sanders is going to be the chalk, and you know, for good reason, he's a really good play. But I also really like Carson Wentz and DeSean Jackson stacks in tournaments because you have Jalen Reagor out, which will just open up a little bit more for Jackson. I know Ertz and Goddard are still going to be the focal points, but if Miles Sanders is going to be one of the most popular plays of the slate, that means Carson Wentz won't be, because most people won't want to pair, you know, the quarterback and the running back in most cases. So you look at the spot, the Bengals are sporting the 8th lowest pressure rate in the NFL. That's good for Wentz to stay in the pocket and throw some deep balls, and that's what you want with DeSean Jackson. The Bengals, 11.7 average depth of target allowed, is the highest in the NFL. And of course, DeSean Jackson's always going to be high up there in average depth of target, currently 7th in the league at 17.6. So I love that combination in tournaments. I think they'll go overlooked, and there's definitely upside in this spot. And then, yeah, I like Zach Ertz. I like the Zach Ertz call out too. The Bengals linebackers have not been good this year, and Ertz is still, like you said, running more routes, playing more than Dallas Goedert. And I agree with Drew Sample at 3,500. I mean, the Eagles, their linebackers have not been good either. And Jalen Mills is their starting safety, and I think that's been a big reason why we've seen Logan Thomas have, you know, 50 and a touchdown against him in week one, and then Tyler Higbee went crazy against them with 3 touchdowns in week number 2. So those are my favorite plays from the game. If you want to run it back with AJ Green, maybe, but I worry about him. He just looks really slow right now, and Darius Slay is still a very good corner.
Well, and I've heard a lot of people out in the streets talking about AJ Green and air yards and target share and all those kind of things. And if his roster percentage, which I think it's going to come in decent this week, one of the easiest calls ever in DFS, unless you just think that they are going to smash and grab and just crush the slate and break it in half, then one of the easiest calls usually to make is to fade a chalky wide receiver. And for everything that I've heard people talking about with AJ Green, I'll just fade him and I'll play Tyler Boyd on the Cincinnati side. And like you're talking about, I think the Jalen Mills call is a really, really sharp one, because the Eagles have been really good against tight ends in previous seasons, and he's a big reason why they kind of suck this year versus them. So I like that call, man. So, all right, let's move on to the next game. So Washington is headed to Cleveland. The over-under sits at 44.5. Cleveland is favored by 7. For me, dude, there's really only one play I want out of this game, but what are your thoughts on it?
So, yeah, so earlier in the week, this game was kind of a really meh for me. Like, I'm not playing Baker. I think Nick Chubb is a little bit underpriced at 6,900 if you want to go to him. I have no problems with it. But we got news today on Friday that really makes me want to look at Terry McLaurin here. He had his breakout game of the season last week against Patrick Peterson and the Cardinals. He had over 100 in a touchdown. And now you look at we've seen the Browns injury report the first 2 weeks. They've been without Kevin Johnson and without Greedy Williams. Kevin Johnson looks like he's going to return. Greedy Williams has already been ruled out. And Denzel Ward got downgraded in Friday's practice, and he's questionable. If he doesn't play, Terry McLaurin at under 6K is really, really enticing, given how bad those secondary corners already are for Cleveland. And Denzel Ward's been incredible so far in his career, and especially the first 2 weeks this season. So if he sits, Terry McLaurin will be an awesome play. And I also still, and I'm sure you'll talk about it, I'm pretty sure that's who you were alluding to, still perfectly fine with Logan Thomas, who's another one of those sub 4K tight ends that I'm interested in.
Man, I didn't know about the Ward call.
Popped up about 15 minutes ago. That's why I keep TweetDeck open, man. TweetDeck during the podcast is a lifesaver.
Dude, I'm gonna flip the script a little bit. I actually do have some interest in Terry McLaurin then.
Yeah. And I hate to backtrack real quick, but
that's fine.
And we were talking about Mike Hughes in Minnesota. He just got ruled out as well. So cornerbacks are now getting hurt around the NFL, and it's opening things up for some of these receivers.
Yeah, I mean, look, Denzel Ward is the guy that I had questions and I had concerns about with McLaurin, because he can actually, unlike a lot of wide receivers in the NFL, he can actually turn and run with Terry McLaurin and has the speed to do so. And if you look over on FTNDaily.com and you go to our wide receiver matchup right now, Terry McLaurin is going to – he would either see would have been Denzel Ward on the outside or Terrence Mitchell. If you go to the wide receiver matchup tool and you scroll down, one, two, three – Terry McLaurin is inside the top 12 to 15, depending on what you're looking at as far as a matchup with Terrence Mitchell on the outside going for Cleveland. We know McLaurin is going to garner probably close to a 25 to 30% target share in this game. Like, that's how Washington, outside of my dude I'm about to talk about here, that's how they're going to move the ball. And, yeah, I'll absolutely pull the 180. I do have interest in McLaurin now.
If he sees Terrence Mitchell... He has like a 4.6 3.40 time against McLaurin's 4.35 speed. Yikes.
It's big yikes, dude.
Hashtag big yikes.
Ooh. But all right, so we got to talk about a few other receivers in this game. Because if you look at, so I know that Odell is coming off with, you know, a pretty good game, but him and Landry going against Fabian Monroe and Jimmy Moreland, they haven't played terrible. They haven't played great in their coverage. I definitely think that you can get behind Odell in this game, especially, you know, if my whole concern with going with any Browns receiver is how much pressure does Washington and how much are they able to get after Baker in this game? Because if Baker's pressured, then you need the full fade, like, everything about it, except out of the running backs, which Washington has been good versus the run because, like we're talking about, their defensive line is good. So I got interest in McLaurin. My favorite play out of this entire game is Logan Thomas at 3,700. How he's still down there is wonderful for me, but I don't really understand it at the same time because the guy's been getting a ton of usage.
Why is he $700 cheaper than Austin Hooper? Is not even a thing. Austin Hooper is not a thing at all in this.
No, offense. Austin Hooper is not, and Austin Hooper is not going to be a thing. And if you look at Logan Thomas, I mean, look, Cleveland, the way you beat them is with short area targets. They're 22nd against short area passing. They're 23rd in DVOA against tight ends. I've allowed right now the second most receptions to tight ends and second most touchdowns through 2 weeks. I love Logan Thomas, man, and at his price point, I might just play all the Logan Thomas, especially coming off a week where he busted as the chalk, and not really worry about anybody else unless I'm worried about Zach Ertz breaking the slate. But thoughts on Thomas?
Yeah, absolutely. I've alluded to it in the beginning of the podcast. There was a couple sub-4K tight ends that I'm interested in. I talked about Akins. We talked about Drew Sample. Logan Thomas would definitely be the third. Cleveland, they gave it up the touchdown to Uzama last week, and then they gave up a lot of receptions to Drew Sample after that. And then week one, Mark Andrews, 2 touchdowns. So that's the weak point of their defense with the linebackers. It's going to continue to be the weak point of their defense. He is clearly, like, if Denzel Ward's out, he's the number two behind McLaurin. But if Denzel Ward plays, I like Thomas even more.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. Definitely with you. All right, let's move over to the Rams going to Buffalo. Over-under sits at 47. Buffalo is favored by 2. I don't really understand it. I know the big thing, and everybody has been talking about on Twitter, and it's been the first word out of everybody's mouth, is Zach Moss has been ruled out. So everybody's like, "Wee, Devin Singletary week." And I'm like, so Devin Singletary bad chalk week? Like, what? Huh? Like, you do realize that the goal line back for the Bills is still active. Like, he's still going to play. You know that, right? Like, so I don't get it. Like, I understand that Singletary is going to get a lot of run in this game. And yeah, he's going to get touches. But when Josh Allen gets 2 rushing touchdowns, all of Twitter is going to, like, explode, and all of the chalk donkeys are going to melt their faces off. But are you on Singletary this week? Because I really don't understand the play. Like, I'm just going to fade him.
I definitely understand the fade because, look, even last year, like, when he took over for Frank Gore is still getting the goal line work. Now, they're not going to activate T.J. Yeldon, give him that role, I don't think. But yeah, I mean, Josh Allen is legitimately unstoppable in that goal line role. I think Singletary's fine in cash because he's going to get 18 touches most likely at 4,900. And the Rams have not been great against the run so far this year. They have one of the lowest stuff percentages in the NFL in terms of runs stuffed at or behind the line of scrimmage. And Singletary's been catching the ball a little bit more than we thought because the Bills have been passing more than anybody except for me had thought coming into the season. That's another thing, though. Like, we talked about it after the Jets game. We're like, yeah, maybe the Bills just called so many passes because the Jets run defense is their only strength. But then it happened again against Miami. They're playing to the strengths of their team, which is an improved Josh Allen and an elite receiving trio. And that's what they're going to continue to do, I think. So Singletary should get 16 to 18 touches. If he scores, he's probably going to smash his price tag, but there's a very good chance still that he doesn't unless he breaks one. So I'm okay with him, but he's like, just because Zach Moss is out does not mean Singletary is a must play by any means. But yeah, like, I don't know if I'm going anywhere else. Like, you can always play Josh Allen because he's what, probably the second best quarterback in the NFL, right? That's how it works after 2 weeks.
Like, it's, you had to get that in here, didn't you? You had to just eke in the Josh Allen.
Well, here's the thing. I was told, right? None of his games count because he played the Jets and Dolphins, so they don't count. That's what I was told, anyway.
Oh, my gosh, man. People are crazy.
Yeah, it's so dumb. But I love Stephon Diggs. He's legitimately looked like a top-five receiver in the NFL through 2 weeks. But do I want to pay $7,000 for him against Jalen Ramsey? Probably not. John Brown is on the injury report. He said he expects to be ready to go by Sunday, dealing with a minor foot injury. You can make, like, the Rams corners are good. It's not just Ramsey. They've been playing well as a unit. And then Dawson Knox, not that I was using him anyway, but he's out with a concussion. If you play Tyler Kroft, you're just not smart. So, like, the Bills are really not that interesting to me, although the total for this game is relatively high. My interest in this game, though, and I think my favorite tournament play of the entire slate, is Cooper Kupp. I love Cooper Kupp here, and here's why. NFL teams against the Buffalo Bills, they're smart. They don't throw at Bay White. They do not throw the ball towards Bay White. And yes, I called him Bay White.
I was like, who are you talking about?
Tre'Davious White. Look, he's been targeted 4 times in coverage so far this year. Like, Preston Williams got shadowed by Tre'Davious White last week, and they just didn't throw to him. Devontae Parker, they are picking on opposing offenses. They are picking on Levi Wallace, and they are picking on Teron Johnson. Cooper Kupp is going to see Teron Johnson, and the Bills so far this year, 8th most slot targets allowed, 5th most slot touchdowns per game. We saw what Mike Gesicki did out of the slot last week, and then Jamison Crowder out of the slot in week 1 had a huge game. Cooper Kupp is going to be really, really overlooked here. Teron Johnson has not been good. He's allowing 16 yards per catch and nearly a half fantasy point per target. I love Cooper Kupp on this slate. I think I think Robert Woods is going to be fine, but he's going to see more Tre'Davious White. And I don't envision, especially if these linebackers are back for Buffalo, I don't envision the Rams being able to run the ball as well as they have been. So give me all the Cooper Kupp this week at, I believe, $6,200. On DraftKings.
All right, so we need to talk about this for a second. Cooper Kupp is an elite GPP play. Elite. Like,
he's legitimately my favorite on the slate. Number one.
If you want to capitalize it, elite. Cooper Kupp is going to see some run, and people are not going to want to play him. Like, right now, he is probably going to come in, like, sub 3% rostered in GPPs. And
dude, it's so good because
I love it.
The average DFS player doesn't like playing guys against Buffalo because they know they're an elite defense. But B, they'll like, that's why cornerback receiver matchups, I don't think you can fade, because like, we both know that Robert Woods is going to see the majority of Trey White, but a lot of average players will see it and be like, oh, Cooper Kupp's probably going to see Trey White. Like, not the case here. And we've seen, like, I'll take the L. Levi Wallace has been bad. Teron Johnson has not been good either. Like, you're not throwing at Tre'Davious White. Nobody wants to. Nobody does it. And if they don't run the ball efficiently, and if Tremaine Edmonds and Matt Milano are back, that's going to put a cap on Tyler Higbee. And then where else do they go with the football? Like, I love it.
I'm with you, man. And I wrote up Cooper Kupp, so over on FTN Daily for our advanced 10 stats weekly, Cooper Kupp has played 85-86% of the snaps in the two games. Now, his slot usage has gone up. He was 51% of the slot week one, 64% in week two. You're talking about Taron Johnson. That is how you attack this Bills defense. Like, legit, that is what teams do. Versus the slot, they've given up 29 targets over three games, over 300 yards. Cooper Kupp is going to smash and grab, and nobody wants to freaking play him. Now, part of this, and you bet, I am going to lace up my shoes because it is victory lap time, dude. I did not understand it in the offseason. Hell, I don't even understand it now. But everybody, all the people that talked about and they raved and ranted about how bad the Rams offensive line was going to be this year and how they're just terrible. You need to take your L and take your L now. You could do it while you just listen to the crickets chirp, but you need to just take it. Take your medicine, baby, because the Rams are sixth in adjusted line yards right now. They are blocking like crazy. Whitworth and Havenstein are back. Both of them are top 24 tackles in run blocking grades. So even if people want to talk about their precious PFF grades, head over to PFF. Look at those grades, baby! Because they're blocking!
And they played Dallas's front seven, which is pretty good, and the Eagles' front line, which is pretty good. Another linebackers kind of suck, but their D-line is still good. Like,
my whole thing is that it was bad analysis to sit here and crap on this line because the entire line got hurt at Week 10 last year. It was bad to begin with. It's bad then, and it's bad now. This team, so I'm going to differ from you a little bit, dude. This team can run on the Bills. I firmly believe that because if you look at the Bills, they're 21st in adjusted line yards allowed, 22nd in second level yards. If we hear, like we've been talking about, Cam Akers is dealing with a rib issue, and now McVay is talking about, well, he's not progressing like I thought he was going to. That's because he's probably got a rib fracture, and you're lying through your teeth, and you haven't come out and stated it yet. So he's probably going to be out this week. And so we're looking at a backfield that's going to be what? Henderson splitting with Brown, who's got a broken finger he's recovering from. He had surgery on. Henderson is a great play this week, especially if we hear that Brown is ruled out. I mean, dude, off what? The chalk of Jerick McKinnon, off the chalk of Devin Singletary. And people are going to look at the Bills and say, well, the Rams can't run, and they can't run on the Bills. And I think both of those points are wrong. So I like Darrell Henderson at his – he's above 5K right now. I don't have it pulled up around. He's either 52
Henderson's or 5,400. I would rather play Singletary personally.
Jared Goff is not going to vulture rushing touchdowns from Darrell Henderson. That's the point I'm going to make here. And Devin Singletary is getting – he's getting cucked at the goal line. Like, that's going to happen, man. So I like Darrell Henderson and GPPs. Whether Brown plays or Brown's out, I think that Henderson is going to get some love if Brown gets ruled out, but I don't think that Akers plays. Kupp is an elite tournament play. I really like him. If you want to play Josh Allen, that's fine. I just don't like his wide receivers in this matchup. I think that the best cornerback matchup on the board for Buffalo is probably Cole Beasley. And this week, I just feel like he's a thin play. Like we're talking about with these slot wide receivers like him and Humphreys and such, they need like nine targets and to get in the end zone to pay off because they're not going to be targeted deep. So, I like this game overall. It's just there's not a whole lot of like correlation plays that where I would be stacking it. But as far as one-offs and pivots in this game, I absolutely love this game, Adam, because I think that there is a big way that this game could shoot out and go over 50 as far as the point total in this one. So moving over to a game that I'm not going to play anybody out of, like legit, like I'm just crossing it off my list and moving forward. I understand if people want to play some guys out of this game, but the Jets are heading to play the Colts. The total, the over-under sits at 44. Colts are favored by 11, and I understand people are going to look at that and they're going to say, I want to play all the Jonathan Taylor. The Jets are just going to sell out to stop the run. Like, that's what they've done. That's what they're going to do. And for all of the volume that I think Jonathan Taylor gets in this game, the Jets are still tackling well. Jonathan Taylor, for all the things that he has done well this year, has not shown that he's not been super, super elusive as far as tackle breaking right now. So if the Jets are going to sell out to stop the run and say, okay, Phillip Rivers, beat us. Last week, and if we wouldn't have seen what we saw last week, I would be saying, okay, let's play some T.Y. Hilton because the Jets' corners are slow. They're bad. That's how you attack them. I just, dude, I got really concerns, man. Like, a call of recency bias, crap on me, like, all you want to. With T.Y. Hilton not able to take advantage of what he saw versus, like, the Vikings and the corners that he played against, I'm not willing to go that route again. I'm just not. And I'm not going to go down the Phillip Rivers rabbit hole again. Dear God, I burned American dollars doing that versus the Vikings.
Same.
I think that this game is going to be slow, and I think it's overall just going to be nasty. I think the Jets, as a punt defense at 2K minimum, are in play, and people are going to hear that, and they're just going to say, okay, sure, whatever.
I put them in lineups already.
Yeah. The thing of it is that we know that Phillip Rivers is going to have turnovers. Like, that's going to happen. If Jonathan Taylor, if they sell out to stop the run, and T.Y. Hilton is dusty and is gassed, then this game could easily hit the under and just be a total just nasty, just abomination that you don't like anybody to play out of this game. But any other thoughts before we move on?
There's one play from this game not named Jonathan Taylor that I have some interest in, and it's Michael Pittman at 4K. That's about it.
Sell me on Pittman.
He's cheap. He's going to be in an every down role now. But at the same time, you can make the case that it's going to be Zach Pascal. So it's just the fact that the Jets' secondary is still bad. If they get a play action shot deep, he could take one to the house. But yeah, I'm not like super sold on it. It's just, if I had to make a case for anybody not named Jonathan Taylor from this game, it would probably be Pittman. And no, I'm not playing any of the value receivers from the Jets.
No, and we need to mention that. I'm sorry. Like, we've talked about it before. It's never Chris Hogan week, and I'm sorry. It's never Braxton Berrios week. Like, no. Just no. You're going to put American dollars and shekels on the side of Adam Gase and his ability to scheme up an offense? You must not like your money. That's all I got to say.
Yeah, we can move on.
All right, so Carolina heads to play the Chargers. The over-under sits at 44. The Chargers are favored in this game by 6.5. We do know that Justin Herbert is going to start this game. What are your thoughts, Adam?
Yeah, so this is the other game where you see, like, it's the Bengals and the Panthers that are just the prime matchups for running backs. The Joshua Kelly thing is interesting. I think he's in play. I think there's this take that Joshua Kelly's going to get 20 carries a game. He's going to get enough to warrant, like, flex consideration in seasonal leagues and value plays for DFS. I think a lot of his 23 carries last week had to do with the fact that it's the keep Patrick Mahomes off the field kind of syndrome, especially with a rookie quarterback making his first start. I think that had more to do with it, but at the same time, he's probably still going to get 15 carries in this game, and that's enough against Carolina. I mean, Carolina, dating back to last season, has allowed multiple touchdowns to running backs in 7 consecutive games, and we've seen what they've already done this year. I mean, Leonard Fournette had 2, and Ronald Jones had 1 against them in week number 2, and then in week 1, it was Josh Jacobs getting him for 3 touchdowns. So Austin Eckler and Joshua Kelly both also saw more targets with Justin Herbert under center. That's good for their ceiling and their floor. They're both absolutely in play, and they're probably where you start from this game. But Justin Herbert's presence definitely makes Keenan Allen a little bit more interesting, and Hunter Henry a little bit more interesting. I mean, the Panthers' defense, I mean, they're not generating any pressure. They can't stop the run, and their secondary isn't anything special either. So I don't know if I want to, like, full stack, but, like, I mean, there's a lot of pieces to like from the Chargers here, and I think their offense is going to move better with Justin Herbert under center.
Yeah, so here's the thing on Austin Eckler and Joshua Kelly. Because everybody knows they're playing the Panthers, I think that people are going to want to play them. And Austin Eckler is priced all the way up at 6,800 on DK. Joshua Kelly is at 5K right now. And I think that both of them are in play. But outside of, like, large fields, or if I need to roster Kelly to make a lineup work, then I'm with it. The problem that I have with both of them, as much as I love this spot, who's going to get the goal line work? Who's going to get the majority of the passing work? I think they split it right down the middle, Adam, and you're really flipping a coin on hoping and praying that one of these guys gets into the end zone. So where they have Austin Eckler priced, I would rather just play James Conner and know he's going to get all the freaking work. Play Miles Sanders. Play a guy that we haven't gotten to yet, but is also cheaper and in a better spot. Arguably the same kind of spot. So I don't think that I play Austin Eckler this week. Kelly, if I need the salary savings to make the rest of my lineup work and he's the last guy in, then yeah, I'll play him. But like I'm talking about, if Daryl Henderson's going to get the run, I'd rather play Daryl Henderson. You know, but I think that Kelly is a good, depending on where his roster percentage comes at, I think that he could be a good pivot off of, like we're talking about Devin Singletary or Jerick McKinnon. If they're going to, you know, kind of gobble up all the roster percentage this week in GPPs, then yeah, Kelly's in play. I'm with you, dude. I'm totally with you. I think that really the most interesting part of this game is the Chargers passing attack for me. And I'm going to preface this by saying there are really, really better quarterback plays on this slate. So outside of something large field or multi-entering, like if I'm playing 20 lineups, 150 lineups, I want exposure to Justin Herbert. You know, if I'm playing single entry and three max like I usually do, I'm probably not going to play Justin Herbert just because I think that there are quarterbacks in much better positions. I like Herbert, where he's at. He has the rushing equity as well. And we're talking about Eckler and Kelly. I think Herbert, like if he gets in the end zone for one or two, he's going to squash all the Eckler and Kelly love. But as far as Herbert goes, you saw this offense and this team allow Herbert to throw deep versus a team in the Chiefs last week that is ranked fourth. And they've been top five against the deep ball in the last 2 years. They allowed him to go deep at the fourth highest rate last week against, like I'm talking about, a very good defense. Now he gets to face against the Panthers, who can be eat up deep. Like, they're 22nd in DVOA versus deep passing. Mike Williams, we saw him get 8 or 9 targets in week one. He's firmly in play here. And people want to talk about all the love that he gave to Hunter Henry. I get it, but that is also against a team that we're talking about. Like, you don't attack them deep. So for the Hunter Henry connection, like, I understand it. But I don't think that I'm going to dive into the fact that he got the 24% target share as much as I'm more likely to go back to Mike Williams, who Adam, where's he priced at on DK right now? I want to say it's 4,100 off the top of my head.
43.
Okay. At that price, I think that he is in play if you're looking for the deep receiver or deep shot. Like, we've talked about other slot receivers, like the Adam Humphreys of the world and stuff like that. Instead of going to 3,900 or 4K for these other slot receivers, give me the deep targets of Mike Williams at 4,300. That's what I want, man. I want the deep shots down the field to pay off for ceiling weeks in DFS. I like Keenan Allen in this spot. He got a 30% target share from Herbert. We know that the Panthers cannot cover anybody, much less in the slot or on the outside. They're just a bad cornerbacking unit, which kind of goes under the radar because the run defense is so bad that I think that people don't realize how atrocious their corner play is. But it is really, really, really bad. On the Panthers side, I think that Mike Davis is an absolute trap. Trap play.
It's a trap.
It's a trap. Like, he is a bad play this week.
I will have zero lineups with Mike Davis.
None. Zero. Zilch. I couldn't even honestly off the top of my head tell you what his price is right now.
5,100.
Because I haven't looked at him. I just keep scrolling up and down past him. Because he's a bad play this week. Like, he's not going to get the... Look, CMC didn't even get the target share in week one that he got. Dude, in week two.
It all came just in hurry up mode check. Like, he's not, I don't even think he's going to get 5 targets. Like, I will eat crow if Mike Davis goes off this week, but I will not have a single, lineup with Mike Davis in it.
No way, man. Because we've been talking about it all offseason. The Chargers are actually improved. They are better versus the run. With Linval Joseph, that they've added in their linebacking core, they can stop the run this year. And the Panthers' offensive line is not good. So if you're playing Mike Davis, please don't. I understand you picked him up on waivers. You're all super excited to play him in season long. In DFS, that ain't it, man. And I'm actually going to rank him lower. Like, he'll probably still come in the top 24 as far as season long for me based off of volume alone and other options and stuff. But as far as, like, what I actually think about him this week, it's new Mike Davis week. Any other further thoughts on this game, Adam, before we move on?
I like DJ Moore in tournaments. I know the matchup is bad, but he moves around so much. And the matchup was bad, quote-unquote, last week, and he still got there. He's too cheap at 6,100, in my opinion. And again, if they can't run the ball and if they're not getting McCaffrey, like if you're not giving McCaffrey the targets he's supposed to get, I don't think you're just plugging in Mike Davis and giving him 6, 7, 8 targets. So I think it's going to continue. Like, people might get on Curtis Samuel at 4K given this talk. I'm probably not going to go there. I think DJ Moore is a really nice tournament play.
Yeah, I'm actually a little bit ashamed of myself for not mentioning him. Like, I'm with you, though. I think that he is a really good play. He's a solid play because last week I was fading him because you and I give a lot of respect to the Tampa corners, and DJ Moore balled out. Like, he went up over 100 yards against Carlton Davis and Jamel Dean, who we think and know are good cornerbacks, and that Tampa defense is not one that you really want to mess with. So I like that call to say that, you know, DJ Moore could have a good game versus Casey Hayward. Yeah, I think it's firmly in play.
He moves around everywhere, so you'll rarely see him just get, you know, shattered by somebody.
Yep. All right, so now we're going to hit the little two-pack of amazing games to target on this slate. The first one up here is Detroit heads to Arizona. The over-under, which is going – not enough people are talking about this. The over-under for this game is right below the game that everybody loves at 55.5 right now, and Arizona is favored by 6. Kenyon Drake is going to smash this Lions defense in the mouth this week. We saw what Aaron Jones did last week. If you're not starting your lineups, like I alluded to it earlier, if you're not starting your lineup builds with Miles Sanders and Kenyon Drake, who DK just got super drunk and blackout drunk priced him this week, I legit don't know what to tell you. I don't have words for you. Why are you listening to this podcast if you're not doing these things? Adam, your thoughts?
Yeah, I know there's some concern about Chase Evans' involvement, but Kenyon Drake's been getting all the goal line work, and he's had 20 and 17 touches in the first two games. And this is just a smash matchup. We talked about it with Aaron Jones last week. I don't know if Kenyon Drake's going to be as involved in the passing game as Jones has been, but it really doesn't matter at 6K with the goal line work on a team that's playing fast, scoring a lot of points, and facing a really bad defense. So at 6K, yeah, he's one of the best running back plays on the board. DeAndre Hopkins is the highest priced receiver on the slate, but he's just getting peppered with targets right now. And, I mean, Detroit's going to be relying on Jeff Okuda, who just, you know, he looked like a rookie last week, and it was a tough matchup for him, obviously. But, you know, they're relying on him, and we'll see if Desmond Trufant plays. He was limited in practice. If he returns, it helps, but it's not going to be enough to get me off DeAndre Hopkins. I'm really upset about Christian Kirk. I wanted to play him in tournaments, but he got downgraded to a DNP. Or not downgraded, but he hasn't been practicing all week with a groin, and I don't think he was practicing today on Friday. So that puts him extremely questionable. I was going to have a lot of interest in tournaments for him because he's been the deep threat for this team. The Lions are giving up a ton of deep passes, but it looks like he might sit. So does that open up anything for Andy Isabella at 3,800? It's still going to be like a lot of, like, Larry Fitzgerald's still going to be on the field a lot, and they're still going to have Hopkins getting all the targets. So I think the Cardinals are obviously in a great spot. I have more interest in tournaments in the Lions side because Kenny Galladay's back to practicing. He looks like he's going to return this week. That was the belief all week. I love Stafford and Kenny Galladay stacks this week very, very much. I talked about Kenny Galladay.
With you.
Yeah, I talked about Kenny Galladay on the Trade 4 episode on Tuesday, but or Wednesday, but I just – Patrick Peterson, still a good corner, but, I mean, Terry McLaurin got after him last week. Kenny Galladay is matchup-proof, in my opinion. They're going to be throwing the ball a lot in this game. And I just love the upside at 6,200 for Kenny Galladay in this matchup. And if he's back in lineup, we're going to see the Lions and Stafford get back to that vertical passing attack, and that offers a ton of upside. So I love Drake and bringing it back with Stafford and Kenny Galladay.
I mean, I think you could full game stack this, Adam. I think this is one of the two games on the slate that you can actually full game stack because if it goes off and it goes nuts, I love your call on Stafford. If you head over to FTNDaily.com and if you look at the beautiful projected roster percentages that our own Kyle Murray works on weekly, daily, hourly, Stafford is looking like he's going to come in sub-6, sub-5%. And at that spot, woohoo, baby! I like him. Because if you look at this, the Cardinals are favored in this game. If they get up, Detroit in neutral game scripts has only been throwing the ball at 52% of the time. But when they get down, it's time to take to the air, man. They are passing at the fourth highest rate in the NFL, 78% of their plays when they are trailing. So trailing by 7 or more points. If we're talking about Kyler Murray, I think that that's where people are going to go in this game. If they're going to play this game, it's Kyler Murray, DeAndre Hopkins, and Kenyon Drake. And I'm not saying that's wrong. I like all of those guys in this game. DeAndre Hopkins going against a bunch of backup corners and rookies. Yes, give me all that smoke. I'm here for that. But as far as like on the Detroit side, Kenny Galladay coming back means a ton for this passing offense. Stafford has cut his deep ball percentage in half without Galladay there. Him and Marv are going to face off. Now, Galladay is going to get Patrick Peterson, who is still a good cornerback. So that's a little bit of a worry. I like Marv a little bit more than him, but both of those guys move across the formation, so he's not going to see probably like a full shadow from Peterson anyway in this game.
Yeah.
So I think Galladay, Marv are in play.
You can double stack this team too. We talk about it all the time. Like when they have Kenny Galladay, Marvin Jones, there's going to be a high percentage of their touchdowns going through the air. I mean, I know they have the three running backs now, but like, I don't see a situation, especially if they're chasing points, where they score, you know, 28 points and it's DeAndre Swift 1 yard touchdown, Adrian Peterson one. Like, I just don't see that happening.
Yeah, So my whole thing about this game is I think a lot of people will still go to the whole Arizona narrative as far as Hockenson and stuff, and I'm not gonna play him this week. Like, I'll get my exposure as far as what he does through the air off of Stafford. They didn't involve him a ton even when Galladay was out last week versus a really, really good matchup versus the Packers. And so I'm not willing to sit here and play him again this week. I'm not.
I agree. I'm not playing him.
He's not getting the targets, man. And now that Galladay is back, he's definitely not going to get it. As far as your Andy Isabella call, like, I get it, dude. I understand
it. Was
it
more of a question than a call. I probably still won't go there.
I won't go there either because my whole thing is that, like, why – how can I justify Andy Isabella, who's probably got a ceiling of 5 targets, even though they're deep, he's got a ceiling of 5 targets at 3,700. Why am I not just going to play, like, pay up, find the 600 and pay Mike Williams that's going to get deep targets, but he has a ceiling of, like, 9 or 10 targets in that game. That's my whole thing. Like, I'll find the savings elsewhere to get up to a receiver that I think his target median is probably what Isabella, like, his ceiling is. Like, would you say Andy Isabella's ceiling is probably 5, maybe 6 targets at best?
Yeah, 100%.
Yep. All right, well, I'm with you, man. All right, so let's move over to the game that I think everybody is going to auto-stack. This is going to be the most popular game for very, very, very good reason. The Dallas Cowboys are heading to Seattle. The over-under is at 56. It is the highest point total on the entire slate. Seattle is favored by 5. This is going to go nuclear. Like, much like, you know, the last few weeks, like, the Cowboys, the Falcons, everybody that's been involved with Seattle. This game is going to go nuclear. What are your thoughts here, Adam?
There are a ton of really good football players and really good plays in this game. A ton. You have Russell Wilson, Dak Prescott, Zeke Elliott, Chris Carson, DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, Amari Cooper. Is it weird if CeeDee Lamb's my favorite? Seahawks have been terrible against receivers, but especially slot receivers. Russell Gage had over 100 in touchdown against him in week 1. Edelman had a career-high receiving yardage game against him in week 2. If you look at our advanced wide receiver DVP tool up at FTN, they are allowing they've allowed 265 yards in the slot. The next closest is Atlanta at 198. They are getting destroyed by slot receivers, and that's primarily where CeeDee Lamb is lining up. And he's been the second option in this passing game because Gallup's more down the field lining up on the perimeter. It's been Amari Cooper and CeeDee Lamb. I will have CeeDee Lamb in a ton of lineups. He is my favorite play, you know, price included, from this entire game. You can obviously stack him with Dak Prescott, run it back with Metcalf or Lockett. I'm slightly leaning Lockett, but I mean, these two are just so good every week that it's like a coin toss, essentially. But yeah, there's a lot of ways you can go with this game. I'm starting it with CeeDee Lamb, though.
Yeah, I like that call. So Gallup is probably going to see a lot of Dunbar. I'm off of Gallup. I played him last week. This passing attack is going to run through Amari Cooper. and CeeDee Lamb this week. Cooper is going to get Shaquille Griffin in coverage. Shaquille Griffin has been just, there's nothing, you can't say anything else about Griffin besides the fact that he has been terrible this year so far. 14 targets, 11 catches allowed, 167 yards, tutty, 140 passer rating. So even if you didn't want to, like, and I don't understand, if you're doing single entry or three max, like, how you are not having one of these, like, this game has to be a stack that you make and a lineup that you make. And if you're not, I don't know, man. Like, this game is going to go nuclear. Both of the quarterbacks are definitively in play here. Like, I don't have to tell you a lot of things to tell you that Dak Prescott is good. Seattle is bad. Russell Wilson has been left to cook, man. And they're throwing the ball at an unprecedented rate for Seattle. That has to be stated here. Dallas, Awuzie is probably not going to play. He's got a hamstring injury. So who they're going to run out there? Trevion Diggs is also dinged up. I think he is going to play. But you're looking at the cornerback matchups here. DK would have faced Awuzie, so who he gets on the outside, I think it's going to be a mixed match. Like, they could play Jordan Lewis, who usually is in the slot, maybe outside. Heck, it could be Brandon Carr that they signed off the street, who has been a slot corner even in his previous time with Baltimore. I think that, you know, you want to play Lockett, have at it, man. Totally with that. You want to play DK, go get it. I'm totally with that. You want to play both, do it. Like, I think that you could just stack this game up. You could play all four wide receivers that we're talking about here. Cooper, Lamb, Lockett, DK. Stack that baby up. Because if it goes nuclear, it's probably through the wide receivers. The way that you get different in this game is how much of the running backs do you want to involve in this game? Like, Zeke Elliott, even in bad matchups, we know he's going to get 20 to 25 touches. Seattle has been back and forth on the ground versus teams. You know, they played the ghost of Todd Gurley 1 week. You know, so how much are you going to invest in, like, what their line metrics are going to tell you as far as what they're giving up on the ground? You know, I think Zeke Elliott is firmly in play. If you want to get weird and you want to, like, triple stack Dak as far as, like, or Russ and go with Zeke and Carson as a way to be different, because we've seen Carson get run in the passing game. He's been scoring receiving touchdowns at an unprecedented rate. He quietly got 17 carries last week. Like, I had to go back when I was looking at this game, and I was like, what? Chris Carson got 17 rushing attempts? No. Oh, my God, it happened. So he's getting run. I think they eased him in week one. This could be a game where we see Chris Carson go out there and get 20-plus carries. So if you wanted to even stack him up with Russ, like, you even wanted to pick one of the wide receivers and get different and go, all right, I'm going to go Russ, Carson, and pick a wide receiver, or run both wide receivers and Carson. So you're playing the narrative in your game stack that Russ goes for three touchdowns through the air, and he spreads it out so each of them get one. Or he throws one each to the wide receivers, and then Carson runs in one or two. All of that is viable, and I think is a part of how you need to game stack this game. It just comes down to how you want to accomplish that and how you're going to get different off of the field. Because you can play the chalk and win tournaments. You know, it is possible, Adam.
Yeah, there's probably three players from this entire game that I'm probably just going to X out. Maybe two. I don't know if I'm fully going to X out Gallup, but he's easily my least favorite.
I am. I'm fully Xing him out.
And then I don't care his involvement. I'm not paying $4,500 for Dalton Schultz, and I'm not playing Greg Olsen. But everybody else is you know, full steam ahead, honestly.
Yeah, I love this game. I think everybody's going to love this game, and I think there's just a lot of different ways that you could stack this game to be different. All right, moving over to the last game on the main slate, Tampa heads to Denver. The over-under is set at 43.5. Tampa is favored by 6. This game is going to be nasty. Like, I don't really have a whole lot of interest in this game outside of, you know, if you wanted to play Mike Evans, he is going to get a wonderful cornerback matchup. The guy that he's going to see in his coverage has allowed 14 of his targets, or 8. He's allowed 8 of his 14 targets to be secured for 164 yards, 2 touchdowns, and 138 passer rating. So I like Evans out of this game. I think this game overall is probably going to be slow. It's going to be nasty. And if Tampa gets up and just crushes the Broncos, then I think that it's going to be slow. I think the only players that I really would consider out of this game are Mike Evans and maybe Noah Fant on the Broncos side. I know there's a guy you want to talk about here, but Noah Fant at 5,400, the price tag, many people are going to be off because of just cheaper or better options this week. I think that Fant has it in his range of outcomes to have a really, really good game. We've seen him be more involved. Now with Courtland Sutton out, I don't think that Jerry Jeudy is really, really ready to take that next step and be the focal point of a passing offense, especially a passing offense led by Jeff Driskel. So I like Fant here because Tampa's been bad against tight ends over the last 2 years, 22nd this year, 27th against them last year. If I was going to pick any plays as one-offs out of this game, it's Evans and Fant. But tell me about and really speak to me about the wide receiver call that you got out of this game, because I'm not with you. I understand it, and I get it just based off of the price point.
Yeah, I mean, there's a minimum salary receiver in this game that's going to be involved, and his name is KJ Hamler. Courtland Sutton, obviously, out for the rest of the season. In week two, Hamler, and remember, he didn't, he entered that game with Courtland Sutton active, so, like, there's room for improvement in the playing time department, but he actually played more offensive snaps than Jerry Jeudy in week two, and he had the same amount of targets with seven. He's minimum priced. Denver's, I understand they're going to be slow, but they're probably going to be chasing points here. I mean, you're just looking at a guy that can get you, you know, a handful of the higher price plays, like the guys from Dallas and Seattle, or DeAndre Hopkins, or some of the players from the Arizona team, or whoever. I think there's definitely a path for him to get, you know, enough at 3K. I mean, he's minimum priced. I think Mike Evans and Chris Godwin are really interesting in tournaments too, because nobody's going to play them because they're priced kind of near the Dallas and Seattle receivers. So at least Amari Cooper and then the two Seattle receivers. So I think they'll be overlooked in that department. And, you know, the Denver secondary is still not great, still missing their top corner, A.J. Boye. So I like them in tournaments. Phillip Lindsay was at least spotted at practice Friday. I haven't seen an update on how much he's done. If he sits again, I think Melvin Gordon's, like, a little bit too cheap at 5,800 given the role he's going to have. Again, it's not an incredible matchup, but I wouldn't be totally opposed to that, but I'm not running to it. We'll just have to see if Phillip Lindsay gets enough work in to give him a chance to play on Sunday or not. And yeah, the Noah Fant call is strong. I mean, we know he's going to be involved. Tampa Bay, that's probably where you attack them is with tight ends. And Fant looked really good this year. But yeah, we'll have to see on Phillip Lindsay. And I will be playing some KJ Hamler just because he's 3K. And there's only room for more involvement with Courtland Sutton now out for the rest of the year.
Yep. All right, so final two games we want to discuss here real quick. Packers are heading to New Orleans. Over-under set at 52. New Orleans is favored by 3. I think that it's the running back side of this game. Alvin Kamara and Latavius are going to smash. I think that they are both really, really elite plays in showdown. I probably will have just all Alvin Kamara captain lineups unless, like, and I haven't dug into that game yet as far as, like, pricing and stuff like that. But Alvin Kamara is just going to – he's going to crush. He's my top-rated running back this week.
Dude, back-to-back Jared Cook revenge games. Come on, man.
Everywhere. Jared Cook is actually a really good play in this game because the Packers are bad versus the tight end. They were bottom of the league last year versus tight end. I like Cook. Kamara is going to be crushed in this game. Traquan Smith is also a guy we know he's going to lead the team in targets. On the Packers side, Aaron Jones, if Davante Adams is out, even with the Saints being an elite run defense, he is going to get a ton more work in the passing game. We saw it last week versus the Lions, and I know that the Saints are more stout on the ground. They still can be victimized by running backs through the passing game, and Aaron Jones can be utilized there. He can get there based off of his role and based off of his pass game usage. That's where I stand on that game. Any further thoughts for the Saints and Packers?
Adams wasn't seen practicing on Friday. Again, they play the night game. So it's really looking iffy for him. We talked about it showdown, but in seasonal leagues, if you want to hold out hope for Adams, try to go pick up Lazard or MVS if they're available, or Traquan or somebody gives you a fallback option. But it sucks, man. I mean, this is supposed to be a really exciting game, but all of a sudden their top two receivers probably not going to be available. So yep. Not as exciting as it could have been.
Yeah. So moving over to the Monday night game, Kansas City travels to Baltimore. Over-under's at 54. Baltimore's favored by 3.5. This game is really interesting. We know that. It's going to be a fun game to watch with Mahomes and Jackson in this game. I think that it really comes down to it's Mahomes versus the Ravens defense, and that's what is going to be the linchpin of this game. And, man, Sammy Watkins he's been banged up a little bit. He's been is he still in the concussion protocol, right?
I believe he is in the concussion protocol, yeah.
So that puts Mecole Hardman firmly in play in this game. Like, if you were struggling and you had Sammy or you had wide receivers that went down throughout the week, if we find out that Sammy's out before, you know, I think Mecole is, if anybody dropped him, he's a good stash. He's a good, like, probably one-off or flex play this week. As far as all the other options, CEH is going to have a tough time on the ground versus the Ravens, but he's probably going to volume his way to being a top 24 back. Especially if he gets in the end zone this week.
Dude, I would love if the Ravens had just one running back, because they're probably going to do a lot of what the Chargers did last week. That's what teams do against Mahomes. They just run. We saw it a lot last year. Remember the Colts game last year against Kansas City where Marlon Mack, they just ran the ball so much. Like, you could run on them, but they're using three backs. Like, it's, oh my God. Like, we talked about Cam Newton earlier. Cam Newton is getting more carries than any of these Ravens running backs, which is absurd.
It's crazy, man, because I'm with you. And I think that looking at this game, it's difficult on the Ravens side. I mean, if you were just going to play Lamar Jackson and then stack up the Chiefs side to try to be different in showdown, like, I get it. This game is going to be really, really interesting. Like you're talking about, the running backs are going to have running room. We know that that's going to be the case. I think the really interesting thing to point out here, too, is the Chiefs can bring pressure, too. And Baltimore has been allowing a ton of pressure to Jackson. So I'm really kind of curious of how this game unfolds. I think as far as with Kansas City, they're going to have to sit here. Mahomes is going to have to pull a rabbit out of his hat. I really think that it's going to have to probably be I'm really not going to be surprised if they try to attack with Mecole. I know that Kelce and Tyreek are going to be involved, but I really think that you're going to see a lot of these other secondary options and CEH get involved to try to get away from those cornerbacks. As far as the Ravens, yeah, I think they're just going to run. They're going to run, because Kansas City is good versus tight ends. Kansas City is good at defending the deep ball. So I don't look for Mark Andrews and Hollywood to have monster games. I think it's Lamar Jackson on the ground, and I think it's the running backs. And I'm not going to be surprised if Mark Ingram or one of these running backs catches a touchdown in this game and that Lamar Jackson just goes wild on the ground in this one.
Yeah, I could see a path where Mark Ingram has a good game, but like, his ceiling last year was like 15, 16 touches or carries, and now it might be like 12.
Yep, agreed. I think his ceiling's probably around 12. They're splitting it three different ways. Nobody's going to get a massive amount of volume in this game besides outside of like Lamar Jackson. So, all right, so that is our DFS game-by-game breakdown for Week 3. Adam and I, as always, will be back next week giving you three episodes. Like we said at the top of the show, get entered to win this signed mini helmet for Kenny Golladay. We're going to be giving that away very, very shortly. But man, yeah, get subscribed to the podcast. We're going to be back. Everybody, good luck in your DFS lineups. For Fade the Chalk, we are out.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Fade the Chalk with Derek and Adam. Make sure to follow your hosts and the podcast on Twitter at @DBRO_FFB, at @APPfeiffer24, and at @ChalkFade. Smash that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.